The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. It's time to go on the mat. The Cedar Valley's longest-running radio show devoted entirely to wrestling. Brought to you by Rolling Ford and the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum on 1650 The Fan.
Welcome to On the Mat, first show of 2018. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by a man who is a diehard Yankees fan, used to be the football beat writer for Iowa at the Press Citizen, but did not attend the Pinstripe Bowl. That man is Andy Hambleton of TrackWrestling.com. Welcome back, Andy.
It's a pleasure to be here, Kyle.
A little sad you didn't go to that.
I'm not.
Well, I am. Just
you say how cold it was there?
I know, but I'm just sad because
I was in South Florida. It was 82 degrees. I was watching it on TV. I was just fine.
It's just that you have such a great history with that program and the Yankees. If you would have been working for the Press Citizen, you would have gone to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that goes without saying, but does that bowl intrigue you at all to even be a part of that and go there?
Or is not it just a whole lot. I want to, if I'm going to go to Yankee Stadium, I want to be there in October or April, May, June, July, August, September, but I want to be there when the Yankees are playing.
And you're excited about next season, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's coming up.
Oh, absolutely.
With the trades and just, it absolutely looks like a pretty full team, so we'll see how that plays out. You were in Florida.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What transpired there? A new concept down there, a new dual meet format. Did you like it?
Loved it. South Beach Duels, 2-day event, two duels per team per day. So everybody that went down there were 12 teams, 12 Division I teams, led by Missouri, Cornell, North Carolina, Minnesota, Michigan State. So, those 12 teams duked it out over the course of 2 days. Started at 11 in the morning, done by 3 teams. You know, from my surveying of coaches, and got a chance to talk to several of them, Ryder, North Dakota State, and some of the coaches that I mentioned already, heard no complaints. It was they're pretty thrilled about being down there in the weather, being down there in a dual format. Brandon Agum from Minnesota talked about how, you know, when they would go to either the Midlands or the Scuffle, they would wind up with, you know, if you have a guy that goes 0-2, he's sitting there for the second day of the tournament. And then you have some guys that are wrestling 6-7 matches, and you come back and all of a sudden, like, they're in different points of their recovery phase. And so you got to train them a little bit differently, whereas, you know, now they're able to pick who they want to wrestle, and everybody's getting 4 matches, so went off pretty smoothly, and I think it's going to become a bigger and better event next year.
And some interesting results. Cornell got beat by NDSU. Just
yeah,
you watched it. It was just
Minnesota went 0-2 on the first day,
yeah,
lost to North Carolina and Cornell.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy to see that. I mean, especially when you look locally with UNI. UNI gets handled by Cornell, then they beat NDSU, and then NDSU beats Cornell. It's just kind of this triage of results. It's been a really funny year that way. Just a lot of balance down below with Ohio State and Penn State leading the way right now, and I think you probably saw that with the South Beach Duels, and I'm assuming they want to keep doing this as a concept that will move forward.
Yeah, and I think they want to move closer to making it more like a college bowl experience for the athletes. And, you know, Cornell and Missouri are, you know, still down there as we're recording this. They, opted to rent out, like, Airbnbs. I got a chance to go through Cornell's house that they're staying in. It's a pretty upscale, like, 9 bedrooms. Yanni Diakamahalis was my tour guide. We got the tour up on Track Wrestling if you want to go check it out. But apparently it used to belong to a member of the Miami Heat, lived there. So there's, you know, outdoor pool. Guys were apparently high diving off the roof into the pool until the owner nixed that. But one of the things that they talked about, like both Missouri and Cornell people talked about, was how, like, you go stay in a hotel and you're basically just hanging out with your roommate for, you know, that period of time while you're on the road. Whereas, you know, they're staying in these huge houses and getting to hang out with each other for, you know, a week at a time and entire team bonding experience. So that was pretty cool. I remember, you know, back when I was in college playing baseball and we would go on spring break trips, we'd stay in a gym on the floor on air mattresses. Certainly not mansions, but that was so much fun and such a cool experience to be there with your buddies. And so I think we're going to see more teams doing that next year. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty cool event in the future.
A lot of options out there, and there's Oklahoma State going to Italy to wrestle North Carolina State. You had the Midlands, you had Southern Scuffle, but you had a great interview with Tom Ryan. He opted out of holiday tournaments because of his family. If you want to just fill the audience in on why the decision to do that is.
Yeah, so Tom Ryan said that after the passing of his son, I think after his first year at Ohio State, that he really made him step back and evaluate some things, and placing a more of a premium on family time for his guys on the team. And he says even though you may compete at a holiday tournament, you're still in competition mode when you're back home, when you're giving guys a break. You know, your mind never really shuts off, and so they just have opted the last 10 years or so to sit out the holiday events and come back and wrestle in that first weekend of Big Ten duels coming back. So gives his guys a little bit longer break. He feels like he doesn't need it at Ohio State, that they're going to get enough competition as it is to get ready for March. Said he felt differently. If he was at Hofstra, he'd probably feel a little bit differently about it, where, if he's still there feeling like they need a little bit more competition, over the midpoint of the season.
In studio with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. First show of 2018 will include Tom Borelli, the head wrestling coach at Central Michigan, and then also Ned Shuck. He's doing a great job with Division III Wisconsin Whitewater. We get a chance to talk to him. They're going to the multinational or multi-division national duels. Talk to him about that. Central Michigan had a third-place finish at the Midlands, but as we continue to talk about these holiday tournaments, we talked about Ohio State not going, the Midlands, you had Southern Scuffle, South Beach. You have a multitude of options now, and right now you're seeing a product that really is getting diluted. The Midlands was as weak as I've seen it since I've been following it in 20 years. Southern Scuffle, Northern Iowa had a good showing at second place, but 70 points behind Penn State. I think we're seeing that level of the desire to compete post-collegiately is kind of gone right now. It used to be, man, you'd go there, Mitch Clark would wrestle, Joe Williams wrestled for 10 times, Gable. I mean, you could go on and on about the Midlands field. It's just not there anymore. You had one post-collegiate this year. It felt like just a lot of reserve guys going in at the Southern Scuffle in the Midlands. As we talk about what's happening with a lot of multitude of options, it's kind of like a Netflix era. You just have a lot of options, and you have to choose what you're going to be, and they don't hold the prestige they used to. Midlands used to be tougher than the national tournament for a while. It was tougher to win that, more prestigious in some ways. Do you see that becoming a problem, or do you think that's going to be a good thing for the sport to have different options?
I don't know. It's an interesting debate, right? I mean,
it is. I mean, it's a great question.
Like, is it good for the sport to have Midlands down a little bit? No, but is it good for the sport to have a marquee college event in South Florida where wrestling at the high school level is thriving? I don't know how many people, in our listener audience really realize, how much Florida high school wrestling has improved in the last 10 years or so. It's really good, and there's, just not options for kids down there to, they don't have a Division I program in the state. So, really the closest, you're going to get, I think probably North Carolina, Virginia Tech, some of those ACC schools, Presbyterian coming into the picture, Citadel. I mean, then you also have like the Southern, the Southern Scuffle up there. But that's a pretty good haul away from, from South Florida. So I think it's good to take wrestling into that region of the country, and then, as you mentioned, just how it's diluted. Like, look at this year. Look at Oklahoma State and North Carolina State getting ready to wrestle in Italy. You had Cornell, Minnesota, Missouri, North Carolina have been teams that have gone to the Scuffle. Rider and North Dakota State have gone to the Midlands. So, that event really took a bite out of, and the event overseas, duel overseas, that really took a bite out of those two holiday tournaments. You know, the traditional holiday tournaments, Midlands and the Scuffle.
Yeah, it did. And just being at Midlands, going to that, it just felt a little blah. You just had maybe five or six teams with their full lineups, and then you just had a smattering of guys there. But it just didn't have that pop of what's going to happen here, and this really dictates what might happen the rest of the season. And I don't think we're going to get back to that with all of the options. I think because of the creativity that's happening in wrestling, whether it's outdoor dual meets, I think it's that bar of where can we go next? Can we go to Italy? Yeah. Can we go to South Beach? And so Midlands is going to take a hit, and Southern Scuffle, which took over the Midlands, is now taking a hit too.
Well, one of the things that Rob Cole told me back like April, May, somewhere in there, when they started putting plans together for South Beach, when it looked like, you know, when they announced that it was going to happen, he told me about, you know, one of the things I remember him saying was, you know, if you're a head coach, you're coming right off the holiday and you're getting up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to get guys down to wait for the scuffle. And then you're there till 10, 11 at night. And then you're getting up at 4 o'clock the next morning to do it all over again. And, you know, like I said, those were pretty short days where down in South Beach, like they're getting up, you know, getting ready to go make weight about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning and you know, out of the gym by 3. So,
yeah.
You know, they still got two matches in by the time I think Midlands was, you know, it probably spent twice as long to get through two matches there. So still getting, you know, the amount of matches that they wanted to get in less time and being able to do some more things as a team. So it's pretty appealing, I think.
It's a quality point because being at the Midlands, and you've done this before too, think how many sessions you've gone in the morning and stayed all the way. You didn't go to lunch and you stay all the way to the end at night as a journalist for you, and even just watching and then taking a 2-hour break and then you come back. It's 6 hours for the first session to get over.
Yeah.
And then you're coming back and watching another 3 to 4. That's a big day. And you can't really process that as a human being, especially in this Twitter age. You want your product and you want it and you want to get going to the next thing. And so it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I always used to say that the Midlands was the longest day in wrestling until I went out and covered the Beast of the East, which the first day starts at 7:45 in the morning runs late. But, you know, I remember there were times that covering the Midlands where that first session on the 29th would run basically, I think there was one time where they kicked everybody out just in time to let them back in for the next session, for the night session. Yeah. And if you're lucky, you got time to run over to Mustard's to grab a burger and get something to eat in between sessions. But, yeah, they're long days. But you know, from your vantage point, how much did the venue this year, how much did it seem different not having it in Welsh Ryan Arena? Do you think that took away from it a little bit?
I do. I think Midlands, it's a sentimental tournament just because there's so much history there. I love it. I love Welsh Ryan Arena. Of course, you're referencing it being rebuilt. I thought Sears Center was really a quality place, beautiful facility, but it just kind of lacked that intimate feel where you're right on the mat, you're so far away, and I just don't even remember really much cheering at all. It just didn't seem like fans were getting into it. Kemmer's kicking someone's butt, and there wasn't that typical Iowa just going nuts because he's about to close the deal. Just didn't have that vibe to it. And part of that's the, I think, just maybe lack of teams, too. You just didn't have those quality rivalries between maybe a Penn State or an Iowa being there. It's just, it's tougher. So I think being back at Welsh Ryan Arena is going to help. I hope these tournaments don't go away because I like them so much, and it's just a great part of the narrative of our sport.
Well, Ben Askren's been talking about putting together a veterans team next year, so that could add something to it.
That would be really cool. Yeah. That'd be really cool. We just have a few minutes here. I want to make sure we talk about the big news, and that's Spencer Lee's going to be wrestling this weekend against Michigan State. We've talked about this as a storyline for a long time. He got beat at the Midlands by Bresser. The blueprint's out there on how to beat Spencer Lee, and that's the same blueprint that Darian Cruz used last year against Thomas Gilman, is do enough to stand around and then use your explosion. Bresser's an explosion guy. And so with that situation, I think we have seen Spencer Lee, what he's going to have to do to improve on, and that's on his feet. And Bresser actually got away from bottom two and wasn't able to get the top game working from there. From your vantage point going forward, Spencer Lee coming out, it's an unprecedented move for Tom Brands to bring a true freshman out. What do you see is going to happen in a really loaded weight class at 125? Where is Spencer Lee going to fit out in the mix for the remainder of the season? Because it's a short season now. We're down to the final stretch.
Yeah, I think he's going to be in the mix to win it. I really do. I think that you see how dynamic he is, both on his feet and on top. You know, I mean, for crying out loud, he put 15 points on the board against Sean Russell in what, like 3.5, 4 minutes
it's
or something.
Crazy.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, a returning All-American. Piotrowski's been ranked in the top 15 most of the year and put a 17-2 beating on him. So, you know, I think, you know, they'll learn. He'll learn from that defeat. They'll make some adjustments, and he'll be in the mix, I think, to win it all.
So now we have
I don't think that Tom Brands wouldn't make this move if he didn't think Spencer Lee could win the national title
and
this year.
We've seen he can do it, and I think it's certainly plausible given what he's done already, just the domination. Now we have a team at the University of Iowa that I think is now that trophy-contending team with Pat Downey, Spencer Lee. We talked about the either-or early in the season when we talked about it could be a disaster or it could be some major upside. This is a positive team right now. I feel good about where Iowa wrestling is at this point in the season. I think they have a real nice upside. Is it winning it upside, being the NCAA champ? Probably not, but I think that they can really look good at the NCAA championships with this lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we haven't even factored in Downey or Spencer Lee into our rankings yet, and Iowa jumped from 8 to 4 after the Midlands. Just, you know, those teams from basically 9 all the way up to 3, Arizona State at 9, North Carolina State at 3, and everybody in between are really jammed up there, and that's why Iowa was able to take that big jump, that big surge, basically because Sam Stoll went all the way up to number 4, Cash Wilkie went to number 2. And then you start factoring in where Downey slots in, which is probably somewhere in the top 5. And Spencer, I think, will probably come in at 9 because I think Bresser is 8. But there's certainly a bump that they're going to probably be the number 3 team, the clear number 3 team in our rankings here in the next week or two.
And I think there's some good upside just as far as feeling good about the future of Iowa wrestling. There's guys that aren't even competing right now with Murin, Warner. You can throw out a ton of guys. Yeah, just guys that you feel solid about going forward where you're not thinking the cupboard's bare. Not that it's ever been bare at Iowa because they're always in the mix. I think, what have we said, the top 5 finishes, they're the most consistent team in wrestling as far as what they produce at the NCAA championships. But I just think that if you're a Hawkeye fan, you have to feel good about what's going to happen the next few weeks. And especially against Oklahoma State on January 14th, I would say that Iowa's favored in that meet now, if you go up and down. I think that the Piccinini-Spencer Lee match is going to be one you want to go watch and be a part of. There's just a lot of great matchups there that we get a chance to watch. We got to close out this segment. I know that you're excited. I'm excited to talk to a guy that I don't think gets enough credit. I think Central Michigan is a program that flies under the radar a little bit. They're in the MAC. They were competing with the University of Northern Iowa until Northern Iowa moved to the Big 12. But we get a chance to talk to Tom Borelli. He has a assistant coach that has ties to this area, and Dylan Peters. We're going to talk to Central Michigan head wrestling coach Tom Borelli next on the mat.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When all you want is sports, all you need is 1650 The Fan.
We are back on the mat, 1650 The Fan. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. First guest had a solid performance at Midlands. His team did. Central Michigan placed 3rd at the Midlands Championships on December 29th and 30th. Head coach there, Tom Borelli. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, great to have you on the show. We were talking about the Midlands and all of the tournaments that are going on with Southern Scuffle and the South Beach Duels. Oklahoma State's over in Italy right now. You chose the Midlands as a college coach in a Division I program. What do you see for the future of these holiday tournaments?
Well, that's interesting. You know, it's hard to say where the direction that wrestling's going right now. You get a lot of mixed messages. There's a push to move it to a one-semester sport. You know, with the qualifying situation the way it is now, as far as, you know, you have to set your guys up to bring qualifiers to your conference, and then from a coaching standpoint, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're trying to get our guys ranked as high as they can, trying to get them the the right wins over quality opponents, trying to get them to bring a qualifying spot to our conference tournament. You know, some other programs aren't in that situation. Maybe their guys are already ranked pretty high, and so they decide not to wrestle guys. It's just, you know, it's a tough thing to gauge, you know, where everything's headed.
Why do you choose the Midlands? Why is that the tournament you go to?
Well, we've kind of gone back and forth the last 2 years. The last 2 years we've been back at the Midlands. Previous to that, the 3 years previous to that, we went to the Southern Scuffle. And then the years before that, we were always at the Midlands. So we decided to come back to the Midlands because it works better for our schedule. It's on the 29th and 30th. It's not as much travel as going down to the Southern Scuffle. Southern Scuffle is on the 1st and 2nd. And we start our conference schedule pretty much the next weekend. Like, we wrestle Ohio University this Sunday here. So it just gives us a little bit more time to train and get ready to start our conference schedule. And, you know, not as much travel. And I think that's part of the reason why so many teams aren't, you know, are choosing not to go to the Southern Scuffle or the Midlands anymore. Is, you know, you jump right into your conference schedule the next weekend, and if your kids are dinged up a little bit or tired or run down, it makes it tough. Those conference dual meets are pretty important to some schools.
You mentioned getting as high as possible in the rankings. I thought you were maybe someone that didn't really look into that. I think at one point you had said that you won't read any of the WIN magazines until after the season is over. Do you get into rankings? Is that important to be high in the rankings then, in your mind?
Well, here's the thing that's important. It's not important as far as, you know, it doesn't gauge how well your guy's wrestling, but, you know, there is some importance to it in that, for example, last year we took 9 guys to the Nationals. I don't know that we had but 1 or 2 guys that weren't ranked. Now they're seeding 16 guys, all right? If you're seeded from 13 to 16, which is where most of our guys are, then in your second match, you're wrestling a kid that's pretty highly ranked, a 1 through 4 guy, all right? Your chances of winning that match, you know, you think you can win those matches, but let's say it doesn't work out your way. Now you have to win 3 matches in the consolation to be an All-American. If you're seated, you know, 1 through 8, then you don't hit anybody that's ranked until the quarterfinals. If things don't work out for you in that match, now you only have to win 1 match to be an All-American. So those things are all important. You know, it's not necessarily from a notoriety standpoint, you're not trying to bring notoriety to you with the rankings, but you're trying to get where you're seated in a spot that, you know, you have a better opportunity to accomplish your goals.
We're on the mat with head wrestling coach at Central Michigan, Tom Borelli. We're talking about the Midlands, but also want to talk about one of your new assistant coaches, Dylan Peters, former 2-time All-American at the University of Northern Iowa, is on your staff. Just tell us the story about how you approached Dylan Peters about coming on staff to be a Chippewa.
Well, you know, obviously Northern Iowa was in the Mid-American Conference for the last 5 years. So, you know, I had an opportunity to see him wrestle for 4 of those years pretty close. You know, we would duel them. We would see him at the Southern Scuffle. We would see him in the MAC tournament. So, you know, I was around Dylan a good bit. And I just always liked the way he carried himself. You know, he was pretty poised, pretty low-key, didn't try to draw a whole lot of attention to himself. But you could tell that the coaching staff at Northern Iowa really enjoyed him, and the team kind of rallied around him a little bit. And that's what you're looking for, is someone who's kind of a natural leader and does it the right way, not doesn't do it by trying to draw a lot of attention to himself. And so I always had a good feeling towards Dylan. We never really talked much, but, you know, I just watched him and observed the way he handled himself. And so last year at the national tournament, I knew he was hurt. He didn't have the national tournament that he wanted, and he was pretty disappointed. I could tell he was real disappointed. And I just went over to him and told him that it was a pleasure, you know, competing against him over the years, and I liked the way he handled himself and how he, you know, just the air that he had around him. And I asked him what he was going to do in the future, and he said he would like to get into coaching. And I said, well, do you mind giving me your number? I'd like to call you. But, you know, I wanted to talk to Doug first and that. But we ended up talking to each other, and it just kind of, you know, worked out from there.
Another coach that has a big prominence in our sport right now, Casey Cunningham, best wrestler to come through your program. He was a two-time finalist and then won the NCAA championships in 1999. When you had him as an athlete, did you know that he was going to have a big upside as a coach?
Yes, I did. I did. You know, I knew that's what he wanted to do, and I knew just the way he carried himself, the way he approached things. He was a leader by example, and he's still that way. You know, I know that he's the guy that's in the weight room all the time, and the guy on the mats all the time, and the guy kind of if he's going to ask you to do something, he's probably done it himself or can do it himself. And I think naturally wrestlers are drawn to that.
And if you can go back, you told a great story about 10 years ago when I talked to you. I just want to rehash it here. When you were in high school, I think that you were maybe the smallest guy in the room, but you found that when you yelled something, people responded to you. Can you take us back through that story about when you knew that you kind of had that coaching element and that people really responded to what you say?
Well, I was, I think at that time I was wrestling 101. I think the weight class was 98, and I think by the end of February it was up to 101. You know, you got a 1 pound allowance in January, or 2 pound allowance in January, and a 1 pounder in February. And we were, it was the weekend before where I grew up, we had a lower state tournament, an upper state tournament, and then you had the state tournament. So it was the weekend before the week before the lower state tournament. And the coach had asked me to get practice going. I think he had something going on, and he asked me to get practice going. So I was having the guys do the things that he wanted me to have them do, and they weren't quite doing it right. So I stopped practice, and I said, hey, guys, I don't know about you guys, but you know, I want to be a state champion. I have goals, and I'm not here just to screw around, and I don't care if our coach is here or not. I want to be good, you know. I want to accomplish my goals this year. And I said, you guys get back to work and you know, act like you want to be somebody. And so then we started doing what we were doing again, and I stopped for a second, and I looked around, and everybody was going pretty hard, you know. And I said, hey, this might be something I could be good at.
Right.
And I was probably about 16 years old then. So that's the first time I noticed that maybe I could be a leader get the right reactions out of people.
We're on the mat with Tom Borelli, head wrestling coach at Central Michigan. Do you feel like Central Michigan is underappreciated at times?
Yes, I do. I really do. But, you know, I also understand, and I try to tell myself this all the time, to the victors go the spoils, you know. So you have to do something before people are going to appreciate you. Now, they're just not going to appreciate you unless you do something.
Tom, when you became the head coach there, did you think you'd still be there 26 years later?
No, I never thought I'd be here this long, you know. I never thought I'd coach this long, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's just something that as the years go by, you just get into you don't realize it, you know. You're just doing your job, and you're doing the best you can, and the next thing you know, you look up, and it's 26, 27 years later, and you're like, what happened?
I mean, as we talk about just where you fit on things and being underappreciated, you got third at Midlands, had a solid performance there, beat some teams that were predicted to maybe win it, and you guys placed ahead of them. Is there a team that you like to beat more than any other team?
Well, in our state, and, you know, obviously at the University of Michigan, you know, in our state, just because of, you know, I think probably the majority of our young wrestlers in this state grow up wanting to wrestle for the University of Michigan or Michigan State, maybe, you know, because of the two Big Ten schools in the state. But, you know, Michigan has you know, the prestige of the university and the prestige of the athletic department. So I would say that's the team that we'd like to beat right now, you know, but yeah. It's getting to be in our conference, Missouri. You know, we kind of were the dominant team in our conference for a long time, and then Missouri came in, and I think they've won the last five conference championships. So, you know, if we're gonna get back to the top, we have to go through Missouri.
And I think that there's got to be a little bit of pride knowing that you have a winning dual meet record against Michigan State.
Yes.
I mean, that there's another rival. I don't know if you think they're a rival, but that's a Big Ten team, and I don't know if that's a recruiting pitch for guys you're trying to get, but that certainly has to help at some level.
Well, Michigan and Michigan State in-state are the people that we have to beat for recruits right now. Not saying Eastern Michigan isn't doing the right things, but again, you know, kids grow up in our state, and Michigan and Michigan State have the, you know, the notoriety.
Is it rewarding for you to have a little bit of a coaching tree with your son at Stanford? You have Ballyard at Eastern Michigan. We talked about Casey Cunningham. You got some guys out there doing some good things. Is there some pride in that?
Definitely, definitely. And not only in the college ranks, but in the high school ranks, too. A number of the head coaches in the state of Michigan are Central Michigan alums and wrestled here.
Now, with the MAC conference being what it is, you mentioned that there were some changes. Northern Iowa is now out of there with a few other teams. Do you like that a few of those teams went away, or would you have rather had those teams stay in the conference?
Well, obviously, Northern Iowa brought a lot to our conference. We would have liked for them to stay, not only from a qualifying situation, but also just I really enjoyed competing in the West Gym. I enjoyed competing against their athletes. Their athletes wrestled hard and brought a lot to our conference that, you know, you had to get ready for. So I think of any of the teams that have come and gone, that's probably the one that I will miss the most.
Do a lot of people know about Central Michigan if you are flying under the radar? What do athletes, when you recruit them, do they know about some of the things you've done and accomplished?
I think so. I think people know. You know, people that are really paying attention to wrestling know. I mean, we've had national champions here. We've had over, you know, 40 All-Americans since in my time here. We've won the conference 13, 14 times. You know, I think if you pay attention, then you know. But, you know, I still think the majority of the college wrestling fans, you know, they're caught up with what's going on in the Big Ten, and they're caught up with Oklahoma State and maybe a few other teams like a Lehigh and a Cornell. But other than that, there's only about 10 to 15 teams that get the lion's share of the publicity, you know.
We're on the mat with Tom Borelli, head wrestling coach at Central Michigan University. We got to save time for this. We have a feature called the Hot Box. We lock you in, give you five questions, hoping to make you sweat. Tom Borelli, are you ready for the Hot Box?
I'm ready.
All right, question number one. What is a Chippewa?
A Chippewa is a tribe. You know, the Saginaw Chippewa Indian tribe, and the reservation is about 5 miles off of our campus. So that's why we're the Central Michigan Chippewas.
Well, you nailed that one. That was a great explanation. Question number two, give me three last names that are a color.
Black, white, and red.
Yep. Or we would have taken brown, green, blue, silver, or gray. So those are the other ones. I don't know if gold would be in there. There's probably goldsmiths, but you nailed that one. All right, number three, describe your mother using one word.
Conscientious.
I can't say I agree, so we just have to give you that one. Question number four, what's the craziest thing you did when you were a student at the Citadel?
Sneak off campus a number of times.
Well, you weren't supposed to do that. You got to fill me out. I didn't even know that you couldn't be off campus.
Well, when you're in a military school, there's certain times when you can't leave campus, and you only get so many overnight passes and so many weekend passes, and otherwise you can't be off campus, and they do room checks and all-ins. And there's a number of ways to sneak off campus, and I probably tried every one of them and some.
Okay. That's a great answer. We'll give that to you. Final question in the hot box. If your son Jason Borelli said, "Dad, we're going to give you $25,000 more than what you're making at Central Michigan, but you got to come and be an assistant coach for me," would you take that job?
No, no, not at this time of my life.
You wouldn't do it?
No, no. But I enjoy Central Michigan. I enjoy the Midwest, and I'm not a California guy, especially a San Francisco guy. I don't know if those. You know, those guys out in Palo Alto, I don't know if they could put up with me. I'm a little too old for them.
All right. Great answers there. You're out of the hot box. 5 for 5. Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to having you back on again soon.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right. That was Tom Borelli. Up next, we have Ned Shuck. He's the mastermind between Wisconsin Whitewater Wrestling. We're going to talk with him next on the mat.
Log on and listen online at 1650thefan.com, the online home of 1650 The Fan.
We are back on the mat, 1650 The Fan. I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by Andy Hamilton of trackwrestling.com. I don't see much of a tan on you, Andy. I don't know if you got enough sun. You probably want to be there.
Never enough, man.
Never enough. Our next guest and final guest of this show is someone that both you and I see a lot of places. It sounds like you've seen him a lot more than I have. Ned Shuck, head wrestling coach at Wisconsin Whitewater, is on the line with us. How are you, Ned?
I'm doing great.
Hey.
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
We just got to settle this right away. You dropped your phone in the toilet this morning?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's actually kind of funny because it's like one of my biggest fears in life, you know, is that... You know, every time I go to the bathroom, I make sure if I have my phone, I keep it guarded and keep it away. But, yeah, my youngest son had a little accident. He's 4 and had a little accident last night. And so I was helping him in the bathroom and had my phone, my hooded sweatshirt. And I leaned over and just happened to slip right out of my hooded sweatshirt pocket and right into the toilet. So, yeah.
That really is a fear, though. There's times where you do get close and it's almost in there. But, hey, you have a good opportunity here at the multi-division national duels. I believe you're ranked 6th in the nation right now. You have a bye. You feeling good about direction of the program?
Yeah, we're feeling really good. You know, I think, you know, what we always try to focus on is just, you know, continue to progress, continue to get better. And there's a lot of benchmarks that you can look at to kind of measure to see, are we doing those things? Are we on track? And so many different levels to that, but as we kind of look at some of the benchmarks that we feel need to happen if we want to be on the top consistently, you know, we feel like we're making progress on those, and we're making gains, and we're clearly not there yet, but I'm really excited about our future for sure.
Seems like being around you have a pretty theoretical mind. You see things maybe a little bit different. How do you implement that thought process into your style of wrestling and the brand that you have at Whitewater?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's so many levels to it with the communication within, you know, the guys and the team. Individually, you know, what you're doing in the room and what you're doing with your alumni outside of that, your fan base, your administration. You know, a lot of that talk is theoretical, you know. You know, you set forth a vision, you set forth what you think needs to happen, and then, you try to get people to buy in and get behind you. And so... that just can't be told to somebody one time. It's something that needs to be continually, mentioned, continually built upon. And so we keep trying to do that. And then we, you know, hopefully let our wrestling do the talking. And we go out there and kick some butt, you know. But we've had our share of wins. We've also had our share of losses, too. So, but overall, we really feel like we're making some good gains on the mat and, you know, outside of the program, too. Really excited about our administration right now. You know, definitely they're excited about wrestling. They're excited about what we're doing. And they're getting a lot of support from our chancellor, Bev Copper, to our new athletic director, Todd Garzarelli. They're really supporting us. And just excited about that. We've got a great alumni base right now. We've really come through with some big funding, and it's really helped allow us to do some things that we've never been able to do before. So things are going well. Things are going real well.
Do Division III programs in Wisconsin have a little bit higher stature since there's only one D1 program in Wisconsin there?
Yeah, you know, it's a little tough to say that, I guess. I don't know. Kind of depends probably who you're talking to, you know. I think a lot of times we run into, you know, kids that want to go D1. You know, we're talking to recruits, and, you know, I was the same way. You know, that's what I did. I probably, coming out of high school, wasn't a Division I wrestler, probably, to be honest with you, you know, in terms of my level of wrestling. But that was just my dreams and my goals and what I wanted to do, and I felt like that was a good fit for me at Iowa. So, you know, that's why I went there. But I think, I think a lot of the kids coming through are starting to see the success that some of the Division III programs have, and they're getting a little bit more exposure media-wise and, you know, getting some more of that. So I think it's definitely on the rise. But I think we're a ways away yet than it will be in, I think, a short while. I think we've got some great coaches right now in our conference, and they are, they're building their program, so it's going well.
Ned, when you joined the Hawkeyes, you were a lightweight, and if memory serves me correct, that was about the time when Jody Strittmatter, Eric Juergens, Doug Schwab, Mike Zadek, TJ Williams were in the lineup. What was it like being a young guy? What's that?
I said, that was a pretty good crew to have as teammates.
What was it like being a freshman coming into a room like that with those guys around your weight, and what was the most valuable thing that you got out of that?
You know, they all brought something different. You know, they were definitely totally different people. All very close, good friends, that type of stuff. So it was really kind of unique to see that high level of wrestling on a consistent basis. You know, I was probably not, you know, anywhere near the league and a lot of most recruits come into a program like that. But all of those guys were national title type of guys, you know, and some of them multiple. And, you know, so just being in there with them every day and seeing how they did it and different lifestyles they lived and still were able to achieve some of their goals was kind of unique. It was, I kind of thought coming from a small town, I had a pretty narrow perspective and didn't do a whole lot of wrestling outside of that. I kind of stayed pretty local throughout, and so those guys kind of opened my eyes to some new things and some new ways that you can still live your life and still accomplish your goals and train hard. Those guys all trained hard and all got after it and all made our team real strong.
Did you know at Iowa that you were going to coach?
I did. It was one of those things that I just felt I had a big impact. Jeff Soma was Jason Fickett were two of my youth coaches, two guys that were just incredibly impactful in my life, and I really feel like they turned things around. I mean, I was probably on a course and younger than most in elementary, where I was kind of a troubled kid to say the least, and those guys just basically saw how much wrestling meant to me and saw the passion I had for the sport and held me to a higher standard in my lifestyle outside of that. I'm not talking about drugs or anything like that. I wasn't struggling with anything like that, but it was just I was getting in trouble, and I was getting a lot of trouble, and those guys just said, hey, you want to wrestle for us? You're not going to be getting detentions. You're not going to be getting trouble in school. And so that was like, wow. I was like, kind of overshadowed. I remember getting sat out, in Minnesota, you can wrestle in 7th and 8th grade in varsity. And I had done that for a year, and in my 8th grade year, they sat me out of a duel, and it just crushed me, because of my behaviors in the classroom. And so those guys turned me around, and right from there, I was like, man, I want to be that guy. I want to be that guy that has an impact on kids' life, that has that, that, I guess, lifestyle type of impact, but also something that, I attribute a lot of, who I am right now because of that one time that those guys made that impact and continue to support me throughout. So I kind of knew I was coaching even after that. I started coaching in 7th grade, helping the youth, and I helped all the way through high school. So I always knew coaching was going to be in my blood for sure.
We're on the mat with Ned Schock, head wrestling coach at Wisconsin Whitewater. As Andy listed off those names of all of those guys you had to compete against, in some way when you're not the guy, when you get a chance and you just get to be in the room all the time, isn't that your coaching training in some way? These guys are so focused on being athletes, and if you do have that analytical mind, you're probably just building all of these skills as you go along. Don't you feel like that's kind of maybe your first course in how to be a good coach?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable. all those guys and all the coaches that we had when I was involved, you know, there were just absolutely tremendous. And yeah, every day, every interaction, every individual workout, every run, every, you know, whatever, individual meeting, any of that stuff, you know, it was all stuff that I, you know, I've drawn and built into my coaching and you know, I think has really helped me, you know, shape myself and you know, has made a huge impact on my coaching.
Ned, I was telling Kyle off air before you came on that I'm almost at the point where I'm surprised when I go to a tournament and you're not there. How are you able to get on the road and do so much recruiting? How do you find time for all that?
Yeah, I mean, finding time, you know, everybody's all got the same amount of time a day, and I think it's just trying to commit to, you know, what's valuable to you. You know, you're looking at your priorities in your life and your program and what you got to do, and, you know, we feel like we got a lot of work to do. We've done well with some recruiting, but we still feel like we got a lot of work to do there, you know. To be honest with you, we feel like some other programs right now are out recruiting us, and we got to step it up. You know, we got to get better there, and we're doing that. We're working hard at it, but a big part of that we feel is being visible and letting people know what we got going on, and you know, showing love to these high school kids, let them know that we're here, we care about them, and you know, we want to see them at Whitewater.
We mentioned you're from Minnesota, you wrestle at Iowa, and now you're coaching a Division III program. You know the history. From 1995 until now, Augsburg or Warburg has won every Division III championship. Why have they been able to do this for this long?
Yeah, I think they found a mold that is consistently, you know, been able to keep them on the top. And I think there's been a lot of programs that are going to hit that 2-3 mark, you know. But even there, like, I really don't feel like there's been a lot of programs that have been consistently 2 or 3. And you know, obviously Augsburg and Warburg have been top dogs. And I think, you know, one of the things that we tried to implement this year is we were able to pull in a lot of money from our alums, and a big impact for that was to hire more coaches. We see that pretty consistently with their programs. They got a lot of people involved. There's a ton of people involved, and they got a lot of alumni, a lot of very successful alumni that come back to either officially be a part of or unofficially be a part of the program one way or the other. We feel that's a big part of their success and something that we're trying to, I don't want to say copy, but something we're trying to build here. And hopefully that will carry into, our continued success. I've seen that. Obviously, you have more qualified people working with your young men and people connecting at a different level than I would as a head coach or whatever. All that stuff helps. So I think that's a big part of their formula. But, I mean, they're always working hard. Those guys I'm talking about recruiting, man, those guys get it done. Those programs get it done. They get some big names in. They get a lot of high-level talent that maybe don't start out at Warburg, go to a different school, and they, you know, decide Warburg or Augsburg's the place for them to go as their second, you know, school. And they get a lot of those kids, and they do a great job coaching those guys up, training them, preparing them. There's a lot that goes to their formula, but I mean, I think there's a lot to be said. There's no substitute for hard work, and there's, you know, those two coaches, Moloff and Keller, those guys are doing a great job, and they've built on their predecessors' success as well. So they're doing a lot of things right, but I think those are some key ingredients that they've done that we're trying to break into.
I noticed that 1972 Olympic champion Ben Peterson is on your staff. How do you utilize him?
Yeah, it's every way we possibly can is how we utilize him. He's just an incredible wealth of knowledge. We just had a team retreat where we bring the guys to kind of like a cabin style deal. We bring the mats and do get some great training, but get some good team building as well. And he's been something he's done his whole life, and just holding camps and stuff with his camp of champs and doing those type of things to really just try to build men. And he's got an unbelievable ability to grow men and mentor them into, mature guys that don't just think, short term, and are thinking long term and the habits that they have in their life that are going to help them, you know, get the success that they need. But when we use them, everything from something, to be honest with you, something that's small, and he's obviously very good at, but the technical part is obviously a huge advantage for us, but he's, you know, that's a pretty minute part compared to what he does with these young men's lives and individual meetings and we have some guys that have a interest in their faith, and so obviously that's been a big part of him, and his Christian ministry has been a big part of his life forever. And we have those opportunities for those kids that are interested in that as well, and as well as our coaching staff. You know, he's an incredibly experienced coach, so we lean on him a lot to help us through some of those tough decisions that we all happen to have. And this is one of those times of year where those decisions sometimes happen a little bit more frequently than the other times of year. But we utilize them every way we possibly can.
Now, Chuck has been our guest. He's the head wrestling coach at Wisconsin Whitewater. Hope you get a clean bill on your phone if you're trying to get it repaired. If not, hope you get a new one that never drops in the toilet again.
I appreciate it. Too.
All the best at the National Duels. That's a fun tournament to have. All the best there.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate all your guys' support and everything you guys are doing for wrestling and the podcast and everything. I love it.
All right. We appreciate that. That's Ned Schuck, head wrestling coach at Wisconsin Whitewater. Andy, you going to be down at the Michigan State meet this Friday?
Still to be determined yet.
Okay. You're at least going to follow it, right?
I am going to follow
okay.
it.
Okay. There's a great, great website I want to tell you about. It's called trackwrestling.com. So
check it out, if you
need any results or content, go to trackwrestling.com. It's been a fun show. Andy Hamilton in studio for the first show of 2018. Also, Tom Borelli and Ned Schuck, you've been listening to On the Mat on 1650 The Fan.
You've been listening to On the Mat, the Cedar Valley's longest-running radio show devoted entirely to wrestling. Brought to you by Rolling Ford and the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum on 1650 The Fan.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.